Niall Hatch is at the East Coast Nature Reserve, not a million miles from where you are in Newcastle, Eric. Niall.
Yes, watching a couple of swallows myself flying over the reed beds here. It's a wonderful habitat for them. And it's a real privilege to know that those are birds that have just arrived in from Africa. As Eric was saying, it's mind-blowing that these birds can travel this distance. They can unerringly come back to the same location each year. That such a small creature can do it is amazing. I remember a few years ago, I was in the Pyrenees Mountains, exactly on the border between Spain and France, in high mountains. And even though it was the start of the summer, there was still snow and ice all over the place. And all of a sudden, two swallows came flying along the main road over past the border crossing. And they were literally flying just 1 centimetre above the road. What they were doing was trying to find the lowest crossing point across those mountains that they could. They were flying no higher than they absolutely needed to just get over those mountains and down the other side. So everything they do is just on a knife edge. They really are, they calibrated their weight and everything just to make sure they can just about make it without carrying any extra weight. And as Eric was saying, the mortality rate for the youngsters in particular is enormous, almost shocking that so many of them perish. It really is just survival of the fittest. Only the very best of the swallows get to breed and pass their genes on to the next generation. Now, it's only in relatively recent times that we've understood anything at all about bird migration. As recently as 300 or so years ago, it was widely believed that swallows actually hibernated dormant in mud at the bottom of lakes and ponds. People didn't realise they flew all the way to Africa. That probably seemed more fantastical than the fact that they might actually just sleep in the bottom of a lake. And it was a gentleman called Gilbert White, a very pioneering naturalist, who finally cracked it. What he did was he got some swallows and he put little coloured ribbons on their legs with water-soluble dye in them, and then he collected those same swallows the following year when they came back. He caught them again and he saw that there was still dye in the ribbons that hadn't been washed out, so he was able to conclude, well, those birds haven't been underwater, otherwise the dye wouldn't still be in the ribbons. He didn't know where they went to, he didn't know what they did, but he knew that they didn't sleep in lakes, and it might seem very basic and simple to us now, but that's how science finds things out. It's trial and error and building on top of knowledge. And back then, of course, people couldn't communicate with each other over long distances. We couldn't say to people in South Africa, have the swallows arrived yet? What's going on there? People had to find this out. But it really is a very recent thing that we understand migration, really. For most of human history, people had no idea what was going on.
And of course, Niall, there was fake news back then, because there was very reliable reports of fishermen dredging up swallows from the bottom of lakes and reporting it like as scientific fact. So fake news was part and parcel of the swallows game 300 or 400 years ago. But we welcome swallows back as the arrival of spring. And in South Africa, the returning swallows back there in our winter is also viewed by everyone in South Africa as the arrival of spring, because they, of course, are going to spend the South African summer down in South Africa while we perish here in wintertime. And of course, it's food driven. Migration is food driven, and also migration is all about having enough food to feed your young. If you can imagine that swallows are insect-eating birds, they need to be able to spend as much time in daylight hours rearing their young. So it's advantageous to them to move north into a place like Ireland. It allows these birds long daylight periods in which to find food and raise their young. And for that reason, some swallows can have 2, possibly 3 broods in one season. And if you look at the mortality rate, if you have a pair of swallows that can produce maybe 12 to 15 young, all that's required to maintain the population are 2 birds to survive. The real issue with swallows that we may be having at the moment is a lack of insects in Ireland, and that will impact the breeding success rate of swallows. And can you imagine if that population of insects fell to such a level that we had less and less swallows breeding successfully, therefore less and less swallows returning, and ultimately the birds may just disappear? That is, of course, the nightmare scenario. But swallow numbers are going down. A good friend of mine who keeps records of swallows from his barns over the last 30 years can see the number of fledged birds leaving his sheds reducing year on year on year over the last 10 to 15 years. And that is a real worry.
Well, as Eric has mentioned, the need to find large quantities of small flying insects, essentially a swallow's only source of food, dictates a great deal of how they live their lives. But how do they go about tackling such tricky prey? And what adaptations has the evolutionary process gifted them with in order to make the task easier? Niall Hatch, can you fill us in on what swallows actually swallow, and be careful not to bite off more than you can chew?
I'll do my best, Eric. So I'm here at Birdwatch Ireland's East Coast Nature Reserve in Newcastle in County Wicklow, just a little bit north of where Eric is at the moment. And I'm currently looking out over the extensive reed bed that we have here. It's a great habitat to see swallows at this time of year because it provides the food that they need. It's a great place for insects. The insects rise with any kind of sunshine at all. They come out of the reed beds. The swallows know this. They swoop over the top and they will grab them. So right now I'm watching a pair of them doing exactly that. It's a great opportunity to actually see how they do it in real time. And the first thing I notice is that they're extremely agile. They can turn on a sixpence. They can spin around very quickly and chase any insect as soon as they spot one. And that's due to a couple of remarkable adaptations that they have. First of all, they have very pointed wingtips. And this is something that we associate with speed. Very often birds that have pointed wings are very, very fast. If you look at falcons, for example, especially the peregrine falcon, it's a very similar thing. It reduces drag at the wingtip and it helps them to be able to just cut through the air very, very rapidly while still providing quite a lot of thrust when they fly. But even more important than that for the swallow and its ability to be so agile is its forked tail. Now, famously, they have an incredibly forked tail, and the adults at this time of year have these wonderful long tail streamers that we can see coming off each corner of their tail. And that actually allows them to turn very quickly. It actually acts a bit like a brake in the air, so that when they sort of splay out their tail and twist it, they can turn around very, very rapidly. And this is something that we associate with many birds which tend to be very agile. Not necessarily quick, though. Some birds can be quite slow, and a forked tail will help them to turn when they're flying slowly as well. A bird like a red kite, a big bird of prey with a forked tail. Looks a bit like an oversized swallow in many respects. It has a similar strategy, even though the two species aren't related in any way. But they're both very agile and can turn very quickly. But what the swallow has, it has both of those. It has the wings for speed, has the tail for turning, which means that they're very good at twisting the air and chasing those insects. Now, the other major adaptation that swallows have to be able to hoover up those insects is a very large mouth. They have a tiny little beak, so if you see a swallow perched on a wire or maybe in its nest in your shed, you might think it hardly has any beak at all, because it doesn't need to have a long beak. It's not digging in the ground like a blackbird would to take out worms. It's not hammering on a tree like a woodpecker to extract beetle larvae that are in there. It's not like a crow that has to maybe go through tear flesh or go through roadkill or anything like that. It doesn't need that. So it doesn't need a long beak. What it needs, however, is a very wide mouth. And when they open their mouth, it's like this gaping chasm. And what they do when they're flying around, they leave that mouth open a lot of the time and they're just gulping up the insects. They're coming straight into their mouths. They don't even have to think about it much and they just swallow them automatically. And if it's a slightly bigger insect, what they do is they clamp their beak shut and they grab it. So sometimes you can actually hear them do that. If it's a very calm day, you can sometimes hear that little bill snap as they're catching the insects if you're very close to them. I can't hear it right now. Actually, because there's so many other birds singing. I have a grasshopper warbler singing beside me here. I have sedge warblers and willow warblers and a little bit of breeze in the reeds
and
as well.
Aircraft flying overhead there, Niall.
Yes, another airborne creature that we get here are airplanes. Yeah, so just beside Newcastle Aerodrome, so you will hear some of those flying over occasionally. Doesn't seem to put the birds off, however. They seem very used to it at this stage. They just kind of ignore it. But the swallows, you know, it's a great opportunity to even compare the way swallows behave and airplanes behave, because the airplanes, they are far less flexible and agile in the air. When I'm watching those planes practicing takeoff and landing, which is what the pilots are doing right now as I'm watching them, they have to go in a big, big loop out over the Irish Sea and come back in. It takes them hundreds of meters to be able to make that turn. For swallow, they can make that turn in the space of a couple of centimeters. They really are incredibly agile. And then, of course, their whole body shape is designed to help them pursue those insects in the air. They're very streamlined. They have slender bodies to reduce drag. And so it's really amazing that they can do this. And they're very good at detecting where those insects are as well. Their eyesight is better than ours, and they watch out for clouds of insects. They also watch for areas where there'll be heat spots from the sun. So they know that insects will be rising from there. And clearly these swallows near me here now have learned that these reed beds here at the East Coast Nature Reserve are a really good source of food for them. Because, of course, we know they've been here before. These are adult birds. There are no young swallows out yet. They haven't hatched from their eggs at this stage. And if some may have laid eggs at this stage, it's still very early days for the breeding season. But the fact is, these swallows, we know, must have nested somewhere near here last year, or indeed were perhaps raised in a nest nearby. Perhaps even in one of the nests that sometimes is built in one of our observation hides here, actually on the reserve. We sometimes have swallows nesting here right in those structures. We know that they're local birds here. And they come back here for food. And as Eric was saying there, the reason why birds migrate, it's because of food. If these swallows were to stay here for the whole winter, they would all die, because, or the vast majority would at least, because there just wouldn't be enough flying insects for them here. So from a survival point of view and from a strategy point of view, it makes sense for them to fly all the way to southern Africa, where they get that second summer and plenty of flies, even though most of the youngsters will die in the attempt, because their survival chances of flying down to Africa are better than if they stayed behind here. Now, with climate change, that may be starting to shift. We are getting more and more records each year of swallows that seem not to have bothered migrating at all. There's a handful of records from places like Cork and Kerry down in the southwest, which would traditionally be that little bit warmer than the rest of Ireland. And certainly when you go further south in Europe, there's several thousand swallows now in Spain and Portugal that aren't bothering to cross the Mediterranean and go into Africa. So it's still only a very small proportion of the European swallow population that isn't migrating to Africa any longer. But that proportion is increasing each year, and that's because the weather is now warm enough in the winter to support enough flying insects that those birds don't have to undertake that risk of going all the way to Africa. So staying behind is paying off for more and more of them. So it shows how important food is to everything that they do, and their whole lives revolve around it. And essentially, that's the reason why they migrate in the first place. If they're not very flexible in their diet. That tends to happen, you know, with generalist birds. They would often stay with us year-round. So birds like crows and blackbirds, robins, they have a wide diet. If one source of food disappears, they can switch to another one. So for the blackbird, for example, during the summer, they love to eat worms. But in the winter, they can switch very easily to feeding on berries, and they become much more vegetarian at that point. Swallows don't have that option. They only eat small flying insects and nothing else, so they have no choice but to go to where the insects are, hence the migration and the risks that they put themselves through.
I'm not surprised there's a lack of insects. We've discussed it many times on the programme, but can I just say anecdotally that when I was driving to and from Cork last weekend for the Dawn Chorus, that my car registration plate was splattered by insects, and I haven't seen that for a long time.
I found the same thing, actually, Derek. The car was covered, and I really remarked on it, because it's been a long time since I've seen that. And I remember when I was a kid, you wouldn't remark on that because it was an everyday occurrence, and it just isn't anymore. And those insects, of course, are swallow food. And we're seeing, because of changes in the landscape, not just because of climate change, but also intensification of agriculture, pollution, other factors like that, destruction of hedgerows as well, that are obviously the places where these insects themselves breed and produce their young. This is reducing the amount of food available for swallows, and indeed many other insect-eating birds like willow warblers and chiffchaffs and swifts. In fact, many of these trans-Saharan migrants, which are insect-eaters, they are declining all across Europe because of the crisis we have now with the collapse of insect populations. So it is quite a fraught time for them. And as Eric was saying, fewer and fewer of the young birds are surviving each year, and that's not sustainable. Their swallows already live their lives on a knife edge. They, you know, most don't survive the migration as it is, but now we're making it even worse and even harder for them to find food when they are here, which reduces their breeding success, reduces the fitness of those youngsters that have, you know, just amazing to think that some of them aren't even laid yet. They're not even eggs at this stage, and yet in a few months' time, they'll be en route to Africa. It's really mind-blowing. But if they're not fully up to speed, if they don't have enough nutrition in their bodies, if their muscle mass hasn't developed properly, fewer and fewer of them will survive. And that really is a very sobering thought.
We spoke about the old sort of tales of swallows, you know, spending the winter in mud. But early observations, there's the old wives' tale that it's going to rain if the swallows are flying low. And there's a bit of truth in that, because insects will move higher and lower depending on air pressure. And if the pressure is high, which is good weather, a lot of the insects will be flying quite high. And on warm summer evenings, you will see swallows flying hundreds of meters above the ground. But if it's going to rain, the air pressure sinks. And with that, so does the number of insects. They're flying lower. So there's truth in the old wives' tale that it's going to rain if you see the swallows flying low. But it's also, you spoke about birds wintering in Ireland, and I saw several very late swallows last year. It was like into December. They were down in Wexford. And I noticed that those birds were young birds, and I wondered where they young birds that were very late broods of swallows, because we had a very warm period in late September, October. So perhaps some of these birds, it was simply too late for them to migrate. It is interesting that we now have an almost permanent presence of swallows in southern Europe. They are resident now. So it may well be a slight change, but all it takes is for a really hard winter in southern Europe to knock that population out in winter. It's, you know, these birds are on the threshold. These birds are pushing the threshold out for the species by overwintering in places like Portugal and Spain.
Niall, you mentioned earlier that you noticed swallows flying just a couple of centimetres above the ground, but I'm wondering what speed they can fly at. I have seen records of between 50 and 60 kilometres per hour. That's fast.
Oh, so that's right. They're very rapid in flight. Not as fast maybe as a swift, but still very, very fast. And that's the pointed wings that help them to do that. Then strong flight muscles as well. But they can fly extremely low, and they're very good at avoiding collisions as well. So you can see them swooping even just a centimetre above the ground, or very often you'll see them swooping above the water as well. And they do that because often insects will emerge from the water and they'll feed on those. But they also do that to drink. And you'll sometimes see them have such aerial control that they'll fly down over a patch of water, maybe a pond, or a river or a stream, and they'll just clip it with the lower mandible of their beak, and it'll scoop up a little mouthful of water and then take off again. So that's how sophisticated their flying abilities are. They're very, very agile. They can fly literally just millimetres above the ground or above the water without colliding with it. There's very few birds that are agile enough to do that. A bird like a robin or a blackbird or even a crow, they're good flyers, but they're nowhere near agile enough to be able to pull that off. The swallows, for them, it's easy.
Now, when I was a child, I was always told that if you see a bird that looks like a swallow and it's evening time, it's a swift. And if you see a bird that looks like a swift, it's daytime, it's a swallow. So can you help me, please?
Well, that's not necessarily true. You will see them both at every time of the day. A great way to tell them apart, though, if you can't see them very well, is to see how they're behaving. If you see birds perched on a wire or on the ground, indeed, you can be absolutely certain that they're not swifts, because they're just not capable of doing that. Swallows do it routinely, as indeed do their close relatives in the swallow family, the house martin and the sand martin, which actually a couple of those are flying around me now at the moment as well. They're fellow members of the swallow family, and they perch perfectly well on wires and on the ground. Swifts will never ever do that. Swifts are also considerably larger than swallows. That's hard to judge when you see them in the distance or the high up in the sky, but when you see them side by side, you can see that the swift's about twice the size of a swallow, a substantially larger bird. But crucially, the swift is also all dark. From most distances, it looks completely jet black. Up close, it's more of a very, very dark, sooty, brownish grey colour, but from any other distance, it looks black. Whereas the swallow isn't black at all. When you see it from above, it may look black, but in good light, you actually see that the back and the head, they're actually a wonderful dark glossy blue colour. They shine in the lights. It's a really unique colour in nature. You don't really see those kind of dark, dark glossy blues really anywhere else. But below, they're much brighter. They have a white chest and white belly, but then they have a little dark blue-black band across their chest, and then their face and their throat is a lovely red colour. So that's something that you wouldn't see on a swallow, or indeed on a house martin or a sand martin. So that's a good way to tell them apart. And probably the best way of all, especially this time of year when you're looking at the adults, is to look for those tail streamers. None of our other birds, especially ones with forked tails, have these long streamers looking like needles coming off the end of their tails. Now, later in the summer, that's a bit harder to judge, because only the adult swallows have that. The youngsters don't. So when they leave the nest and head off on their first migration to Africa, they have shorter tails without those long tail streamers. But at this time of year, it's easy. Those tail streamers are quite visible.
And the collective noun for group of swallows, is it true that it's a gulp of swallows?
I've heard that, yes. A lot of those collective names, they were just invented by Victorian authors, so there's actually no real provenance to them. But a gulp of swallows would be a perfect name for it.
Sounds appropriate, because they're gulping down the food, aren't they?
Absolutely. And those big mouths, I can see how that would think, you know, that they could only eat by gulping. So yeah, that's exactly what they do.
So a gulp of swallows it is. Thank you, Eric and Niall. Stay with us, if you will.